The Leslie Marshall Show, a true democracy in talk radio. Of, for, and by you, the people.
America. Welcome to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is not Leslie. No, this is Mark Levine, your favorite fill-in host for Leslie Marshall. You're only going to get me for about an hour. I suspect that your favorite talk show host will be here in hours two and three. Leslie Marshall will return just after she dispatches Bill O'Reilly and makes him, you know, cry away and nurse his wounds. But you'll have me for an hour, at least, probably just an hour, and hopefully I'll be your second favorite talk show host. And I want to wish everyone a happy new year and ask you if you, like me, were thinking about the new year of 10 years ago. Here it was, January 1st, 2010, just 10 years after January 1st, 2000. And I think most people in the world, at least those with televisions, those living in democracies, able to follow what goes on around the world, I think most people around the world remember December 31st, 1999, becoming January 1st, 2000. Remember how they started in some small islands in the South Pacific, and then they showed Japan celebrating, and on to India, and on across to Europe. You had the Eiffel Tower, and it was lit up for New Year's, and London as well. And then, of course, in our country, New York, Washington, Chicago, Denver, L.A., the Hollywood sign. It seemed a magical night. It seemed like here we were finally entering a new millennium. We were going to get rid of a lot of our old notions. After all, the country was at peace. We've been at peace for a number of years. We were actually in terrific economic times. Bill Clinton had led us to the greatest surplus in American history. And in fact, people were doing a lot better. And I think at that point, having been about 10 years after the end of the Cold War, Americans were looking inward. I mean, after all, you may recall, the worst thing the Republicans could find to complain about in the Clinton era was not deficit spending because there was a surplus, was not a bad economy because there was a strong economy, was not war because there was no war, none of any particular significance. No, all they could think of to blame, of course, was his personal sex life. That's how good times were. And I've been thinking about, well, how much has changed in 10 years. The irony is, as we elect President Obama to be a person of hope and change, Mr. Original Hope, Bill Clinton, also brought us hope and change, and it was only the demolishment of his vision. It was only the destruction of Bill Clinton's America. It was only the Bush depression over the last 10 years that's led us to such misery. In fact, I was reading the Washington Post today, the amazing statistic that in every single decade since they've kept track, Americans have done better, more jobs, more income at the end of the decade than the beginning. That was true in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. Not in the O's, not in the Bush decade. No, in the zeros, apparently, we're no better off than we were 10 years ago. And part of the reason for that has nothing to do with the economy. Part of the reason for that has nothing to do with George Bush's horrific way of helping Wall Street firms at the expense of American people. I've done many shows on that. We will do many in the future. Now, tonight, I want to focus on what I think is on everyone's mind, a certain Nigerian man packing a punch in his underwear with the last name of Abdul Muttalib, who was trained in Yemen. Because he typifies the problems of the O's, the problem of terrorism. And I want to explore this hour, the problem, because I think it is both too large and too small. Far more important than some would think, and far less important than others would think. I think there's a lot of contradictions and ironies in the entire war on terror. And of course, there's not really a war on terror. Terror is a tactic. It's a war on a particular branch of radicalized Islam, not the vast majority of peaceful Muslims that live all around the world, but a particular radical branch that comes from the Arabian Peninsula and is spread slowly, but picking up pace throughout the Islamic world, certainly throughout the Arab world, and even growing throughout the Islamic world. And I want you to think, well, of two things. One, the extent that the threat is overblown. As awful as Abdul Tulab is, he didn't kill anyone. He tried to, and had he succeeded, he would have killed, upwards of 30 people. No doubt about it. It would have been an awful, terrible act of terrorism. Of course, that's not as bad as, September 11th, right? That killed 3,000 people. And September 11th is not near as bad as car accidents. 50,000 die every year in the United States of America. And when you think about it, that do the division, that's a little over 4,000 a month. More die in a month in car accidents than die in the entire September 11th attack. Now, that doesn't mean to me that we can do nothing about terrorism. I'm not saying sit there and do nothing. Because while the threat still is relatively small in terms of the number of people it hurts, 10,000 a year die from guns, 50,000 a year die from car accidents. And in the United States of America, well, if you take the decade and divide by 10 for the 10 years, you'll find that less than 1,000, probably less than 200 or 300, well, less than 500, died per year from terrorism. So one could say that we're over-concerned with the threat. To some extent, we are. To the extent that we are constantly afraid, we are. I mean, I can't help the fact that when I flew home from a ski vacation in Canada just a week ago, I was carefully watching every passenger there on that plane. Frankly, I saw this one larger guy that I was preparing to jump. Now, he may have been able to do me in, I don't know. But I was ready if I had to. And I was very suspicious when he didn't turn off his iPod when the flight attendant told him to. So I'm not saying that I'm above all this, not in the least. But to the extent that Americans are living afraid, I think we need to dial it down a bit on the one hand. On the other hand, I think things could be much worse. Much worse. I won't go into all the things that my fertile mind thinks of when I think of attacks that terrorists can conduct in the United States. I don't care to give anyone ideas, but you know what? I don't think I have to. I suspect all of us can think of far more ways to kill far more people than simply on an airplane. And of course, many, many Al-Qaeda supporters and members, those who sympathize with them, are trying to find a nuclear weapon. I think all that's true. So while I think we should look at the bright side that so few have actually been harmed by terrorism, we definitely need to prepare for the future. And yet, what can be done? What can be done? It is so difficult. Is it right to send 40,000 troops to Afghanistan? Well, then what about the 10 times or 100 times the amount of Al-Qaeda in Pakistan as in Afghanistan? And then what about Yemen? If we're focusing on Pakistan and Afghanistan, even if we discount Iraq, what about Yemen, the country that most Americans didn't know existed until a couple weeks ago? Are we ready for war in Yemen? Yemen isn't the only failed state in the Middle East. What about Somalia? Somalia is as big an anarchy as Yemen. Remember the pirates? Again, they did very little damage considering what they could have done. There are failed states all around the globe. Yemen and Somalia are probably the best examples. And failed states have existed throughout history. This is nothing new. What's new is failed states, anarchies, attacking the rest of us. What about Sudan? In Sudan, there was an awful genocide that's still going on to some extent. It's dampened down a bit. Hundreds of thousands of people, innocent men, women, and children, were murdered, and, well, we didn't do anything. They were far away from us. But what would have happened? What would have happened if some Sudanese person, maybe even someone suffering from the threat of genocide, were to commit a terrorist act against Americans? Oh, then we'd wake up. Then we'd wake up. Then we'd make sure that there's money going to the government to stop terrorist attacks, although in Sudan, the government is the problem. And now we're sending money to a problem government in Yemen. Do you understand what's going on in the Middle East? Have you ever thought about it from the point of view of the average person, the average fairly reasonable person in a failed state like Yemen, or perhaps a minority in Saudi Arabia that is mistreated because Saudi Arabia mistreats all its minorities, not just women, but Yemenis and Palestinians and Egyptians and, well, any of the other guest workers they have. The Arab world, frankly, reminds me a lot of Latin America in the 1980s. Here you have countries with a small number of extremely wealthy people and mass numbers of poor. And of course, in the Arab world, it's magnified by the fact that they have all this oil that, our American economy depends on. It shouldn't, but it does. One of the best things about President Obama is his willingness and to push us away from oil, and I hope he goes further in that regard. So here you have a rich country like Dubai building just a few days ago the largest tower in the world, 160 stories. I'm sure they're quite proud of it. But you know, in Manhattan, we built tall skyscrapers because there was no room on this little island. They had to build up. Have you seen the tower in Dubai? There's a whole plaza around it. They've got the room. They're in the desert. They just did it to show, well, look how wealthy we are. They just did it to show their opulence. Dubai is a country, as many of you know, that has snow skiing in the desert. That's right. They've got this huge hall, stadium, I don't know quite what it is, it must be massive, where you actually can go inside and they in the 120 degree heat, they freeze it down below freezing, create artificial snow, and apparently it's big enough to do a couple ski runs. Think how expensive that is. Meanwhile, the vast majorities of Arabs are poor, dirt poor. And you can look at it country after country after country. Look at Egypt. There you've got dictators. They're our friends. Frankly, they are fairly stable. They don't have that much terrorism in Egypt, but they have a lot of resentment from their government. And that's true whether it's Saudi Arabia or it's Dubai or you name the country, Syria. You name it. The Arab world is full of dictatorships, many of which we support, not all of which, some of which Iran supports, and a mass of disaffected people. And Al-Qaeda tries to exploit that. And so you find people between a rock and three hard places. They don't like their corrupt government that tortures people and doesn't allow for democracy. They don't like Al-Qaeda, which murders innocent people, drops bombs in mosques and wedding halls. And they don't like the United States, we interlopers trying to come in and do things. Not to mention countries like Israel, most of which Israel doesn't even affect, but it's a great enemy. Where are the moderates in the Arab world that say a pox in all your houses? That say we want democracy, we want a responsive government, we don't believe in terrorism. We do believe in reaching out to the United States, but not in a puppet way, but to protect our own interests. Maybe a country like Turkey, in fact. A secular, democratic state, mostly Muslim and has been for the last, 80 years or so. What is the answer here? How do we resolve all these catch-22s? How do we win the hearts and minds of the people in the Arab world? Because I got a dirty little secret for you. If we don't, we're going to be fighting this war forever. This is an asymmetrical war. It isn't about firepower. It's about people's hearts and minds. Toll-free number, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. What do you think? What is the answer here? Are we going to be fighting the war on terror as long as we fought the Cold War? Is there any way out into the next decade? Give me a call. Let me know what you think. We'll be right back after this.
Leslie Marshall, the simple truth in a complicated world. 888-6-LESLIE.
Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie Marshall. Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab was 23 years old. He was not a poor man. In fact, he was the 16th child of an extremely wealthy Nigerian banker. He wasn't one of the masses of poor people who are unemployed and are often the people looking to fulfill the ranks of Al-Qaeda, the ones angry against their corrupt leaders. And yet he fell for it. Well, what do we do? How do we prevent people like Abdulmutallab from joining the cause? There are liberals, some that would say, just give them what they want. Give them what they want. Just let them, let Al-Qaeda rule in the Taliban in Afghanistan. We don't care if they mistreat women. We don't care if Iran blows Israel off the map. Give them what they want and they'll stop. And then the conservatives that say, well, that's a surrender, which it would be. But then they go further and they say, bomb the heck out of them. Bomb everywhere. Teach them a lesson. Bomb them back in the Stone Age. Do what we did in World War II. Do we really think that that will cause America to have less enemies? I'm looking for a way in between. I don't want to surrender. I want to fight fire with fire, but I'm also looking for a way to reach out to the hearts and minds of people so we don't have 23-year-olds getting on planes with bombs in our underwear. What do you think? Bob from Brooklyn, can you help me out here?
Hi, Mark.
Hello.
This is the best show on the radio.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Well, first of all, I think it's important to separate Iran from the rest of the Islamic militants. The
I agree with you.
As far as I know, Iran has never attacked another country in their whole history, at least going back for five
Well, there
years.
Was a long war between Iran and Iraq, and Iraq may have started it, but Iran certainly did its share of going across the border,
yeah,
too.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, if it was up to me, the only way out of this is to United States to disengage and withdraw its military forces from all Muslim countries. They simply do not want to be occupied by with foreign military bases in their country. How would we feel if there was a foreign power with bases in our country or even in Mexico or Canada? But there's nothing that can be done right now because I feel, no matter what I think, or Michael Moore or anybody, or Cindy Shishian, the American people speaking through their representatives want this war. Now,
Bob, let me ask you this. We, of course, were invited to have those troops. The Saudi Arabian government wanted us to have those troops in there because they feared Iran, the very troops that made bin Laden mad. Currently, the Iraqi and Afghani governments, they may be corrupt as all heck, but I think it's fair to say they were chosen by their people. They want us there. Are we to ignore those kinds of requests?
The Saudi government is hated by their people. They hate that monarchy, and they see the United States as propping it up.
That's true in Saudi Arabia. I'll grant you that. That now, there's no question that's true.
Here's the real point I want to get to, if I can just get this in.
Okay.
I mean, Congress, when they authorized Bush to invade Iraq and Afghanistan, that amounted to a declaration of war.
Bob, I want you to hang on. We've got to take a break, but stay with me. I want to take your call and others right after this. We'll be right back, 888-653-7543, right after this.
Want to listen to Leslie while you're surfing the web? Visit www.lesliemarshallshow.com and click on the Hear Leslie microphone to hear the show streaming.
Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine, your favorite guest host for Leslie. She'll be back, by the way, in about half an hour, so you can tell her what you thought of our topic. Feel free to rag on me if you want, or to praise me. I like that, too. I'll be listening. But I got a half hour more, and I'm trying to find, as I've been trying to find for a decade now, a middle position in this war, the next war. I guess they'll call it the War on Terror. Of course, the Cold War is over. But I guess I see a lot of this the same way I saw the Cold War. In Latin America, you had a bunch of repressive regimes supported by the United States, and they were awful. But then you had a bunch of Marxist regimes, terrorist groups, you might call them, people going out there killing innocent people, trying to take over the government. And I didn't have sympathy for either group. I did have sympathy for the people caught in the middle. Today in the Arab world, you have a lot of radical despots. As Bob from Brooklyn has pointed out, certainly Saudi Arabia is not well-liked by those, certainly by those who aren't citizens of Saudi Arabia, because they're mistreated minorities. Women are mistreated. Maybe if you're in the royal family, you're happy with it. But whether it's Saudi Arabia or Egypt, you find you have dictatorships supported by the United States that mistreat their people. But don't forget, we have our enemies. Syria, Iran, they also have dictatorships. They also mistreat their people. And all of them seem to face movements to rise up and overthrow these governments, movements that are as murderous and terrorist as the governments themselves. And indeed, when these terrorist movements start to control a government, as Al-Qaeda did when it took over using the Taliban, then things even get worse. So people are caught in the middle. And we know those on the right that say, bomb them, bomb them. I've also got people like Bob, who sounds like a very reasonable person, but is saying, we need to take all our troops home. And I have to say to you, Bob, I don't think that resolves it either. You know, Barack Obama said in his Nobel speech that evil exists in the world. And I think he was trying to find a middle ground, carrot and stick. And I think if we completely withdraw, if we allow the Taliban to take over, if we allow Sudan to commit genocide, if we allow these radical fundamentalist Islamic groups to basically root out and destroy minorities and women and so forth, that doesn't do us good either. The people then hate us for allowing these people to succeed. What do you say, Bob?
Mark, the problem is just what you said. Trying to find some middle ground. There is no middle ground. If we're going to be involved in an international war in Sudan and Yemen and the Far East against the Islamic militants, and excuse me, in all of these countries, if this is really a world war, a war, and there's Baluchistan and Waziristan and Pakistan, all of these, and Iran, this country has to be mobilized. The country has to be put on a war footing, and that means a draft. We're paying these contractors $100,000 at least a year for one contractor, and there's maybe hundreds of thousands of them. We have a private army. We cannot afford to pay a private army. If it's going to be a war, then mobilize the country.
Well, I'll tell you this. I agree with you completely on the private contractors, because they are in it for a profit. They're not in it to protect America. We end up paying sometimes these Halliburton or Blackwater people hundreds of thousands of dollars where we could play a patriotic American GI $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. I'm not so sure I support the draft, but I agree with you that we need to get rid of these contractors, beef up the military, pay more to our people in the military, give them better medical care, treat them better. Maybe we could still do it with a voluntary army. So I'm against the contractors, but I don't think I'm ready for a draft. No, I don't think we're there yet.
Mark, rose-colored glasses. Even paying the military, you're going to have now people that are making careers out of the military with families and women with children. You can't have women with children. They're serving on the front lines over there. They're not supposed to be in combat. Women with kids cannot be in combat.
Now, I'm going to disagree with you. I don't see why a woman with kids or a man with kids, if they choose of their own free will to serve our country. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of jobs in the military. Women can do just as well as a man. I mean, I'm thinking of things like, you know, being in a combat pilot, for example, doesn't require strength, but requires visual acuity and requires quick reflexes and so forth. And there are also some very strong women out there. So I don't want to make that sort of sexist distinction between men and women. But I do understand that there are parents with children, and
can they suffer. Can I just put a bow on this?
Sure.
Finish up. During the Vietnam War, I lived through that, I mean, at home, but I was in the reserves. But the thinking was then that we could do things halfway, midway, you know, mediocre. It can't be done. Two bills were introduced, the McGovern-Hatfield and the Cooper-Church bills, to cut off the money for the Vietnam War. At the height of the Vietnam War, and in the worst part of the Vietnam War, both of those bills failed. And people
right.
look back on it, they say, oh, the whole country was opposed to Vietnam. No, it wasn't.
Right.
The American people want to keep these wars going, and it's going to bleed us to death.
Well, I mean, I hear what you're saying, Bob, and I agree with a lot of what you have to say. I'm not willing to give up on them entirely. My view is that we need to fight them smarter. Maybe we shouldn't be sending 40,000 troops in Afghanistan, but that doesn't mean we can't have some people there to help fight the terrorists. And it's tough. I'm not claiming it's easy. In fact, the whole point of my discussion today is that there's many ironies in all of this. The biggest irony being that the country of Yemen, which we ignored for so long, you have a guy trained there, he attacks a flight in Detroit, and now we're giving the government tens of millions of dollars. To me, that's a perverse incentive. That causes governments to say, oh, you're ignoring us. We're a poor country in Africa, say, or Asia, and everyone's ignoring us, so we'll allow a terrorist to attack the United States. Oh, now we get all this money. It's horrific what we're doing. And yet I don't see an easy answer. I don't think surrender and I got to say, Bob, and I really respect what you have to say, but if we completely pull out, and I mean remove every last one of our troops, don't have any people there in the Middle East, allow countries like Sudan to commit genocide, allow countries like the Taliban to mistreat women, then I don't think we become Canada. We certainly aren't hated throughout the globe, but we're not exactly well-liked or respected either. I think sometimes people do look to Americans. In fact, I fear to say that the people of Rwanda did look to us and we didn't come. So is there any role for America as a policeman of the world, or do you think we should just pack up and go home?
Well, this was the concept of the United Nations. That's a failure. That's a joke.
It is a joke, but that's not our fault, is it?
But this becomes a basic fundamental thing, reality. We financially and physically can't do all of these things. It's impossible. We're bankrupt as it is.
Well, I think you're right. We can't do all of these things. And so in my view, we should be very careful about where we intervene. I think genocide is one place we should intervene. I think we should be seen as, you know, whether it's Sudan or Rwanda or Kosovo, we should be seen as a country that prevents genocide. For the rest of it, I think we have to support the right people on the ground, and that's very hard to do, and I'm not claiming it's easy. But support those that support democracy in their countries, that support a better life, that oppose corruption, that oppose some of these fundamentalist religions that take over, and help them win themselves. As far as I'm concerned, if the people of Afghanistan don't want to win this war, we're never going to win this war, and I frankly think that was the mistake we made in Vietnam. We cared more than the South Vietnamese did, and once that happens, then there is no way out.
Yeah, but Mark, Afghanistan and Yemen are not real countries. Afghanistan is just a territory with a bunch of tribes running the place.
That's true.
Yemen.
That's true in Yemen as well.
Civil war.
Right. Well, it's actually been the verge of several civil wars. The North and the South have reunited and disunited, and there's a civil war in the North. And these are failed states. These are pure anarchies. You're absolutely right. And so it's hard to take any side in all of this mess. I would rather just let people know that if they attack us, they're going to get it hard back. But trying to make Yemen into a non-failed state or Somalia, or for that matter, even Afghanistan, I don't even know if it's possible. I'm sorry to say. Thank you for your call, Bob, though. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
I thought you made a lot of good points. The toll-free number is 888-6-LESLIE. 888-653-7543. Is there a way out? Are we going to be fighting this war? The Cold War lasted from what, 1945 to 1990? 45 years? Is it going to be 2045 and we're still going to be fighting these wars? What do you think? 888-653-7543. Back after this.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of truth. The Leslie Marshall Show. 888-6-LESLIE. Looking for a gift to show your conservative friends the light? Give them a free podcast of Leslie. They're available at www.lesliemarshallshow.com.
Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie Marshall for just about 15 more minutes. You will hear her at the top of the hour. I'm trying to make heads or tail out of how to smartly fight this war against radicalized Islam, because I have to tell you, I think both sides have got it wrong. And by here, I'm talking about, I guess, the far right and the far left. There are those on the far right that simply say, bomb them. But as Bob from Brooklyn pointed out, we don't have the resources to have a war against the entire Arab world and every failed state within it. I mean, it's not just Somalia and Afghanistan and Iraq and Pakistan and Sudan. Pakistan, heck, they're at least trying. They at least have a democracy now. They deserve our support. But it's countries like Egypt and Saudi Arabia, which we support. And do you know where the 19 hijackers of September 11th came from? That's right. 15 of them came from Saudi Arabia, the other 4 from Egypt. These are dictatorships. They're making their people mad. This is largely what we did with the Shah of Iran, a country that was very pro-American. Very pro-American. But tortured his own people, was overthrown, and now we have a country that's threatening, well, nuclear war, really. But look at the other side. I mean, the liberals that say, go home, don't pay. I mean, you could see an argument he made saying, we shouldn't pay these people at all. We should just go home, and if they kill each other, they kill each other. Largely, that was George Washington's view at the beginning of the United States. Stay out of foreign entanglements. And yet, precisely the fact that we've paid off some of these governments, well, we've gotten some things for it. How do you think we are winning the war in Iraq? I'll give you a hint. It wasn't the surge. It had nothing to do with the surge. Oh, very little. It came off because we started paying people. Paying people not to fight us. Paying the Sunnis to have a Sunni awakening. Paying people off, much like you might do a mafia guy that says, hey, give me money and I'll protect you. When really the person he's protecting you from is himself. But the money, it's making a difference. And Saudi Arabia is, frankly, more stable than the alternative. Can you imagine if Saudi Arabia were overthrown and a group of Al-Qaeda people had all that oil and all that power? It's not just us. They sell oil all around the globe. Can you imagine if Egypt were overthrown by the Muslim Brotherhood? We're between a rock and a hard place, too. I don't like these people we're supporting, but I don't like the alternative either. And it makes me think, to some extent, back to, well, the Americans, they were isolationists back in the 30s. They were saying that we shouldn't come in and help Great Britain and France in trouble. We should just leave them alone, too, when they faced a nightmare. There are people that said we shouldn't have helped as Harry Truman did. And Harry Truman, by the way, is one of my real heroes. Helping in Turkey and Greece, beginning the containment that later on eventually defeated the Soviet Union. So where do we draw the line? Okay, we go in and we save England, but we let the Sudanese fall apart. Is that racist? Or is it simply the fact that England is a democracy? Sudan is not. Well, one thing I know for sure is that Bob's right, we can't do it alone. And I have to say, we're not doing it alone. A lot of times this doesn't get talked about very much. In Iraq, we were mostly alone. There were a few British troops there. We were 90% of it. Okay, well, that's a war that, frankly, we never should have fought because they didn't attack us. But in Afghanistan, we have substantial numbers of NATO troops, and they're going to up their troop count, and they should. If we're going to be the world's policemen, I'd like the other countries of the world to start paying for it. I'm not even knocking being the world's policeman. But why do we station tens of thousands of troops in Japan? It seems to me Japan is a very rich nation. They can afford to pay us for our troops, or they can station their own troops. The same is true with Germany. The second, I think Japan's the second largest economy on earth, and Germany's the third largest economy on earth. Germany's certainly a very rich country. I understand why they want American troops there. If they want to pay us for them, fine. If they don't want to pay us for them, they can have their own troops there. I trust them now. I think the Nazis are gone. I think Hirohito, the Emperor of Japan, is gone. If we're going to be the world's policemen, then let's have other nations step it up. The Netherlands, to their credit, is already getting the kinds of machines that would have prevented Mr. Abdulmutallab from detonating his underwear. So other nations need to rise and do their part. But the question is, what do we do with these failed states? The Afghanistans, the Somalias, the Yemens. I mean, Bob from Brooklyn's right. There is no government in Yemen. Oh, there is one. I mean, technically. They sit in the capital. They're fighting with civil war to their north. They're fighting separatists to their south. In Yemen, everything's so confusing that actually South Yemen is east of North Yemen. Don't ask me why. It's a little. There's historical reason. The point is, these things are anarchy. And if there's one thing we maybe should have learned when George Bush Sr. sent troops to Somalia in 1992, is we don't do well in the middle of anarchy. The question is, how do we get the people of the Middle East to want it, to want peace, to want democracy, to want to live a better life and to be willing to fight for it more than we are? And don't give me the old saw about, well, let's just, you know, we'll feed them Israel. We'll feed them Israel. We'll let them destroy Israel and they'll leave America alone. I don't buy that for a second. I think Israel is, frankly, a careful scapegoat. Really? I mean, Osama bin Laden didn't give a damn about the Palestinian cause. He wanted to get our troops out of Saudi Arabia until he saw, oh, wait, if I say this, I'll get more support. Israel has its own problems. and I think it can defend itself. One of the nice things, in fact, we should learn from Israel is how it defends itself. Have you ever been to Israel? Have you ever flown the Israeli Airlines, El Al? I won't give away all their secrets, but I have to tell you, never have I felt more secure in my life than flying on Israeli Airlines. They knew the questions to ask. They asked me detailed questions. Detailed questions. Oh, heck, you know what? Should I give it away? I guess I should, because anyone who's been on El Al knows this. And there's certainly plenty of enemies of Israel, I presume, who've been on El Al. They will ask you, I remember my favorite question I ever got on El Al, and they asked me some other detailed questions. I was in college at the time, was going to Israel, and they asked me what I was studying in school, and I mentioned, economics was my main theory of study. And they asked me what classes I was taking, and I named a couple of economics classes, and I also said, which was true, I was taking a class in modern art. So they asked me, this agent on the airlines, who my favorite modern artist was. And I told her Kandinsky. And then she asked me, what about Kandinsky's art that I like, and name for me some of his famous paintings. I swear, this was worse than my final exam. I laughed, and I gave her the answer she sought. That's security. Now, I don't know that, any country can rival Israel for that kind of security. But we need to start trying. We need to catch people like Mr. Abdul Muttalib, who was fingered by his own father as being radicalized and dangerous. We should be catching these people. President Obama's right. But at the same time, we shouldn't let them strike fear at the heart of America. Remember their goal. They're never going to kill large numbers of Americans unless they get a nuclear weapon. And on that, I think we should do whatever we can to prevent that. That's serious. The rest is just, it's horrible. But they're seeking to do, much like Timothy McVeigh, they're seeking terrorism. They're seeking that we live in terror. And I think the answer is to calmly go on with our lives, recognizing, taking all the precautions we can, but not to live in terror. Because at the end of the day, we are stronger. Our culture is stronger. We will survive this no matter what happens, no matter what we decide to do in the Middle East. And we need to recognize that trying to scare us is never going to work. Let me go to Scott in Cape Cod. Scott, welcome to the show.
Yes. Hello, Mr. Levine. How are you?
Hey, Scott. How are you? You can call me Mark.
Happy New Year. The U.S., I just heard what you said a moment ago. They're never going to, we're going to get over this and all of that. But what the people have got to understand, these are not savages, Islamo-fascists. I look upon them more as being freedom fighters, like during the Revolutionary War when we fought the British. Sure, Americans think that they're terrorists, but in the Muslim world, they're looked upon as freedom fighters. The Palestinians, they want a homeland for the Palestinians.
Scott, can I make a distinction here? Because yes. I think it's perfectly fair for people to fight for freedom from colonialism or whatever.
Yeah.
But when you bomb a mosque, as Al-Qaeda recently did, killing dozens of innocent people, or when Hamas takes Fatah supporters and rounds them up in the street and shoots them, men, women, and children, or when they went to a Jordanian wedding hall and bombed that, or in Pakistan, they put a bomb in a marketplace and killed 60 people. To me, that's not freedom fighting. If you want to do freedom fighting, you should fight against the governments that oppress you, and you shouldn't be killing innocent people.
Is Israel.
But they're not killing Israelis. They're killing Jordanian wedding people. What's the point of that? They're putting a bomb in a Pakistani marketplace. They would get more respect, in my view, if they were to sit down and negotiate with Israel, much, by the way, as the West Bank Arabs are doing. Fatah is doing this. But Hamas, for example, will never, ever get a state. They're going to go in perpetual war until they're finally destroyed, because there's a difference between trying to destroy someone and trying to talk with someone, isn't there? Okay, we got to take a break. I'm going to be in the next hour. Actually, Leslie's a little bit delayed. So I'm going to go into the second hour. We will continue this topic, and I want to hear from more of you. 888-6-LESLIE. 888-653-7543. Back with Mark Levine after this.
The Leslie Marshall Show, a true democracy in talk radio. Of, for, and by you, the people. Woman, you know you're woman. You got to be a woman.
Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is your favorite fill-in host, Mark Levine. I'm particularly honored always that Leslie lets me fill in for her so much. She's, of course, busily taking down the evil Bill O'Reilly, and I'm here holding the fort of her fans. And, you know, hey, I got to say, I mean, the song's Woman, Woman. The fact she lets a guy do her show, you know, I guess we like each other. What can I say? I am trying to figure out a middle position here, a middle position between the fight them all to the death conservatives and the go home, don't worry about it liberals. I'm trying to really stay pretty close to the position of our president. Now, I don't agree with everything he's done, but let's recognize at least that President Obama is in a tough position. I mean, here he was granted the Nobel Prize by Europeans who I think were leaning on the withdraw America from the world model, take all our troops home, let the people kill each other, don't intervene in other people's affairs. And Obama surprised them. Did you hear his Nobel speech? He said evil exists in the world. And sometimes you have to fight a war to defeat it. I've always felt that there were two completely just wars. The rest I'm not so sure about. Maybe the rest we should take all our troops home. Well, maybe case-by-case basis. But it seems to me there's two things that every nation has got to fight. One is worldwide genocide. When people are rounding up men, women, and children, not just their political enemies, but killing seven-year-olds, then I think the entire world needs to try to stop it. And Bill Clinton, to his credit, did so in Kosovo. To his discredit, did not do so in Rwanda. And to George Bush's everlasting discredit, he did nothing in Sudan. So genocide is one thing. The other thing, and it's perfectly recognized by the United Nations Charter, is self-defense. Every country has to act in self-defense. If you don't act in self-defense, people are going to walk all over you. Just ask the peaceful Tibetan Buddhist monks, who are truly peaceful, wonderful people. In fact, they're complete pacifists. And so when China walked in to take over their country of Tibet, they sat down and prayed. And it didn't stop the Chinese from brutally terrorizing their land. So I believe in self-defense. I believe in stopping genocide. But just about any other war, you're going to have to convince me should be fought. I understand what President Obama was saying when he said there is evil in the world. But in the Middle East, there are no easy answers. I don't care what you say. I don't care what position you have. Whatever position you have, from right to left to middle, I can tell you there's a problem with it. So we have to kind of work our way out in the middle. But first you have to understand what's going on in the Middle East, right? You have to understand there are all these repressive regimes. Some are allied with us. Some are not allied with us. I used to be allied with the Soviet Union. Some are fundamentalist theocracies. Some are merely corrupt authoritarian regimes putting money in their pockets. But they ain't democracies. Well, there's one exception, Turkey. Got to give Turkey a lot of credit. Been a secular democracy ever since Ataturk in the 1920s. The only long-term, stable, majority Muslim democracy on earth. So I give them credit. And I think they should be allowed to join in the European Union. But the rest of the Middle East? Well, it's a mess. Israel's a democracy. But in the Arab Muslim world, not too many. And so you can understand why people are angry, particularly because there's so much wealth in the Middle East. There's so much oil in the Arab lands. And so you have a few extremely rich monarchs, often, sometimes they're just dictators, becoming very rich and helping their families and building a 160-story building in Dubai while their guest workers are not treated very clearly as guests. And whether they be Palestinian or Egyptian or Nigerian or Sudanese or Indonesian, they are mistreated while the wealthy do very well. You can understand their anger. And they don't want to be angered against their own people. One of the things that, frankly, white slave owners learned back in the South, in the United States, in the early 1800s, was that if you have poor whites who are angry at the rich whites, instead of getting them to attack you, you push it off against the poor blacks, the slaves, right? I don't know how many Americans realize that less than a quarter of all white people in the South owned slaves in the early 1800s. Three-quarters of the whites had no slaves, and yet we're still fighting for the honorable South. Well, sometimes I think that's true in the Arab world as well. You have poor people, desperate people, fighting for the very people who made them poor and desperate. And no, that wasn't the United States. And no, that wasn't Israel. That was these dictatorships that control the Arab world. But we're in a bind. If we don't support them, something worse could happen, and has happened. More dangerous countries, countries seeking world nuclear annihilation, which is something I am worried about. So it's not easy. It's not easy. Do you play realpolitik? Do you do as Franklin Roosevelt once said about a Nicaraguan dictator? He may be a bastard, but he's our bastard. Is that true of Saudi Arabia? They may be bastards, but they're our bastards. Is that true of Egypt? What is our responsibility to make our allies seek democracy? And how do we finally help people find a middle way? A way that doesn't lead to radical, fundamentalist Islamic terrorism, but also doesn't lead to corrupt dictatorships or even corrupt democracies like Hamid Karzai in Afghanistan, that leads to a government responsive to its people. I mean, Europe went through this the hard way. They spent hundreds of years slogging away in feudal societies until, well, they had several world wars to resolve their differences. What's going to have to happen? Are we going to have to go that far? What will shake up the Arab world? And again, I'm not even talking about the people that support Al-Qaeda, but just your average person trying to survive in a dictatorship where the leaders don't care about you, and Al-Qaeda certainly doesn't care about you, and frankly, the United States doesn't really care about you that much either. They might, you know, want your oil. What is the third way? What is the fourth way? How do we give people hope? At the end of the day, I think that's exactly what Barack Obama is trying to do. He may not be succeeding, but you can't blame the guy for trying. He's trying to give people hope. Give people hope worldwide. Give people hope in a future. Because if Umar Abdul-Muttalib had faith in his future, I don't think he would have been on a plane trying to blow it up and kill himself and 300 others. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. We'll be right back after this.
Leslie Marshall, real people, real life, real talk. 888-6-LESLIE. Looking for a gift to show your conservative friends the light? Give them a free podcast of Leslie. They're available at www.lesliemarshallshow.com.
Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine, your favorite fill-in host for Leslie, trying to really dig in deep into the pathology of the region we find ourselves in the Middle East, to try to figure out what causes people to support radical terrorist extremists like Al-Qaeda, to feel out how we're going to actually win this war. Because I don't think we can do it through force of arms alone. Now, I don't think we give up force of arms. I don't think we pack up and go home. I don't think we surrender. I think that gives the wrong ideas to our allies in the region and, frankly, leads Al-Qaeda and more extremist groups to take over, maybe even get a nuclear bomb to really harm us one day. But at the same time, I don't think that we go full out and try to kill every last one of them. It never succeeds. Not only is it not humanitarian, but let's face it, two bombers can pop up for every one we take out. We need a middle course. And President Obama, whatever you think of his policies, I think is struggling to find that middle course. And I'd love it if you could help me find that middle course. Or you can always recommend taking our troops home or full war. I just don't think either of those extremes is going to do anything. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Ken from Buffalo, what are your thoughts on the matter?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Ken.
I've got just my own sort of offbeat approach to this, and
okay.
I keep thinking that, you know, through the years, this country has waged wars, and in waging wars had hoped to win peace. And that usually doesn't happen.
Sometimes now, it has. Sometimes it has, and sometimes it hasn't.
Yeah, to what President Kennedy did when, I guess he was the one who instituted the Peace Corps.
Right.
And I don't recall of a whole lot of countries or other peoples of the world being very upset because we'd send people in to try to help them.
Yeah.
Now, our military trained not just to use weapons and to kill, but frequently there are people who are trained to go in and help people. They build hospitals and schools. They can provide medical care and things. And while I don't think that we should pull out our military, if I were President Obama, I would try to give a different direction to the policies. You mentioned on the program about hope. And I think this, the absence of hope, hopelessness, is what in effect fuels not just the occasional rich Nigerian, but the movements, the radical movements, the Al-Qaeda movements, the Taliban movements, movements that can rely on people who have no hope. And if they have no hope in this world, then, hey, a quick self-destruction and a new world with lots of virgins and you're all set.
Ken, I think you make some excellent points. I really do, particularly on the Peace Corps. That is a great suggestion. I think you should write the White House. We need to beef up the Peace Corps. That was a brilliant suggestion of John Kennedy. And because it makes clear that, you know, America is not just a force for evil in the world. We can help you. And the nice thing about Peace Corps volunteers is they don't carry weapons. Frankly, sometimes it's dangerous. But with precisely the fact that they don't carry weapons, they are seen as the good guys. And America can't be put down as this monolithic, warmongering, Guantanamo Bay torturing entity. So I think that's a terrific idea, and we need to do more of it. You're absolutely right.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Thank you. I appreciate that call. I'll tell you this. I know that General McCaffrey is kind of going in that direction. He's talking about the fact, for example, that whenever we accidentally kill a civilian, that puts us back so much farther than even if we risk our own lives, our own troops' lives, our own valiant men and women's lives, by not hitting back at a terrorist because we fear of hitting a civilian. And McCaffrey is talking about building up and doing a lot of things that Ken was talking about. But I actually think Ken has the better idea, the Peace Corps. We need to beef up the Peace Corps. Think of all the hundreds of billions, nay, trillions of dollars we are spending on war. And I think it was Bob from Brooklyn earlier who pointed out that a lot of that goes to contractors. And I agree, frankly, that for one thing, if we're going to spend the money, let's spend it on American military and not on Blackwater, mercenaries who are trying to make profits from these things. But for all the money, even the ones we spend on our GIs, how about spending money on the Peace Corps? I think that's the best thing I've heard all night, Ken. I mean, it goes to the point of what I was saying, but here is a program that has worked well for 50 years. And what does it do? Ken's exactly right. It brings people hope. It shows that we do care about you. And the nice thing about the Peace Corps, I don't know if you know people. I know several people who are Peace Corps volunteers. They're my personal heroes. I've told them that. They certainly live in very difficult conditions. Sleep on the floor with everybody else for 2 years. That can give you backaches. But they just show a kind of love and concern for people that really comes home. You know, I'm reminded of the fact that even in World War II, we almost always treated our prisoners of war, and these were awful people. I mean, Nazis. And some cases, and in Japanese cases, you have kamikaze bombers. I mean, some really ruthless people, but we treated them with kindness, and they remembered that. Now, I'm not saying go too far. In fact, sometimes I think George Bush went too far. We freed a lot of the terrorists from Guantanamo Bay that went back to Yemen and caused a lot of these nightmares. So I'm not saying just free our jails. But generally, I think you'll find that you can kill them with kindness. You can win them over through kindness, through showing concern, and the Peace Corps is a terrific way of doing it. And one of the things that fascinates me about the Republicans' attack on President Obama is they treat his view which I think is actually very similar to Ken's in mind, the idea that kindness matters. Not that we give up. I mean, you didn't hear Ken saying or me saying or Obama saying that we take our troops and go home. That's not our view. That's not my view. That's not the president's view. That may be the view of Michael Moore. But that we use both a carrot and a stick. We use a Peace Corps at the same time we use troops. And when you hear President Obama speak of giving hope to people, speak of spreading peace, well, that's the first thing Republicans do. They scratch their head. They say he's naive. They say he doesn't understand the world. They say, we're fighting a war here. Doesn't he get that? What they don't understand is that peace can be mightier than war. What they don't understand is that building a bridge can be more powerful than blowing up a bridge. Not that sometimes you don't have to blow up a bridge. Not that sometimes you don't have to kill terrorists. But that helping build schools can be more effective in preventing terrorist attacks against the United States than actually killing the terrorist leaders. I happen to think both are effective. You need both. And I'm not going to agree with anyone that says you need only one and not the other. But what's wrong with a carrot and a stick? I don't think President Obama is naive. I think his Republican opponents are naive, or they're just trying to win an election and thinking up something to try to attack Obama with. It's naive to think that you can only win a country over by force of firepower. I think maybe that can be done, but it requires the kind of things we did in World War II. Nuclear bombing of killing 250,000 people in Hiroshima. The firebombing of Dresden. That's tens of thousands right there. That's in Germany. It may be necessary to win an all-out war, to brutally decimate a country and leave it in tattered ruins. That's one way to win a war. But I don't think it's the only way to win a war. I also think you can win a war through peace, through the Peace Corps, through recognizing that we can be both strong and good, and also recognizing that in Guantanamo Bay, we do have some dangerous people there. That doesn't mean we can't close down Guantanamo Bay. We have to close it down because it's become a symbol of all that is bad. It's become a symbol of torture. It's become a symbol of American oppression. That doesn't mean we free them. We bring them to America. We give them trials. And it's always fascinating to me how Republicans don't believe in our American system of justice. They don't believe in our Constitution. They don't believe in our Bill of Rights. They apparently believe that we can't put a guilty person in jail using our system. I don't know what system they want. Maybe they prefer, I don't know, a dictatorship system. In Saudi Arabia, they'll cut off your hands if you steal. What do Republicans want? Do they really hate our Constitution, our Bill of Rights that much? I have no doubt that using our Constitution, we're going to try the hijackers. We're going to try Abdul Tulab. We're going to give them a fair trial. And, yeah, I do think they'll be found guilty, maybe even get the death penalty. But to me, that doesn't mean the American system's bad. That doesn't mean we should go around it. It means we should celebrate it, that you can get rid of bad people in a democratic system. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. This is Mark Levine. We'll be right back after this.
Looking for a gift to show your conservative friends the light? Give them a free podcast of Leslie. They're available at www.lesliemarshallshow.com.
Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine, your favorite fill-in host for Leslie. At least I hope so. So, we've just managed to win our way out of Iraq, right? I mean, that's largely the reason that Barack Obama was elected and supported. He's going to bring our troops home from Iraq. And Afghanistan, well, he put more troops out in there, but January 11th, we're going to start to withdraw. Yeah, we'll see how far that goes. And yeah, we have to worry about Pakistan. Sure, that's across the border. But that's it, right? No. Now every American is going to their map and their Wikipedia and finding out where Yemen is. And don't think your geography lesson is over, because quite soon you're going to need to find out where Somalia is and Sudan. Heck, Chad? The Congo? There are lots of places in trouble in the world. There's lots of failed states. There's lots of anarchy. There always has been. What are we to do? How are we going to deal with Yemen? Here you have a country that is not even a country. It's a bunch of tribes fighting each other in constant civil war. We don't want to be there. But people are being trained there to attack American airplanes. Let me suggest to you that there is a way to fight terrorism, and it doesn't involve only troops. In fact, troops might not even be the best way to fight it. One way, Ken pointed this out, is definitely the Peace Corps. Another way, though, if the Peace Corps is the carrot, is to use a stick. But the stick doesn't have to be troops. I, for one, don't mind a little bit of selective bombing. Now, you got to make sure you're bombing the right people. You don't want to be bombing civilians. But if you know a meeting of Al-Qaeda is getting together a training camp in Yemen, I'm okay if you bomb the heck out of it. Heck, it's a lot cheaper than sending a bunch of troops. Is that too harsh? Well, we've got to be able to fight everywhere, and that's one way to do it. Dennis from Buffalo. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello, welcome.
Yeah, I don't agree with you on this.
I'm,
they got us taking off our underwear over here, you know, and the only reason we're over there is because they tried to kill us.
Right.
And I think we got to get that through our brain.
Right.
We're not there to build their schools, roads, and houses. I'm sorry for them, but I ain't got nowhere to work here. I need some roads built. I need to be on that road building. I need to build some schools over here, you know. And I don't care about their problems, quite frankly. I mean, that's an Afghanistan problem.
But they're attacking
and I'm sure
us, Dennis.
Afghanistan's and Yemen's problems are not Buffalo, New York problems.
That's true. But, Dennis, they did attack us. They are trying to attack
exactly.
us. They're putting
and
bombs in their underwear and bordering our planes.
Kiss up to them.
Well, see, to me, I think there's different there. You said kiss up to them. I think there's different there. There are the Al-Qaeda leaders, and I wouldn't kiss up to them at all. I wouldn't negotiate with them. I said I'd bomb them, right? And then there's the other in the world. There's the dispossessed people who are poor and who are unemployed and wouldn't be supporting places like Al-Qaeda except they don't see any other way out. And let me give you a reason. It's got nothing to do with humanitarian needs. All right, let's just put all humanitarian needs aside. Let's look at this purely, squarely American interest. I actually think it's an American interest, and it's cheaper to put some people in the Peace Corps in there and, yes, build some schools and hospitals than it is to spend the much more expensive cost of fighting wars all across the globe.
Right. But I'm going to tell you another thing that I've been watching all of these wars since even, and I'm just going to start back with the first Bush, okay? When you're kind to your enemy, and your enemy is chopping your heads off, chopping off the heads of the contractors, raping the soldiers, and then blowing them up on the road, and you're still being kind. You're bombing just selected targets, and you're so careful about what you're doing, and it's just going to continue. All we've done is enabled them to kill us.
Well, Dennis, what if we separate kindness? See, you say our enemy. I don't want to be kind to our enemy. And frankly, there were some people who called on earlier in the first hour that talked about us packing up all our troops and going home. And I said I didn't support that. I don't want to be kind to Al-Qaeda. I told you I'd bomb the heck out of him. I'm okay with that. Frankly, I'd even be okay, and I don't like this, but if there's, you know, 30 Al-Qaeda people together and one of them's got a civilian with them, I might even bomb them, even though we'd be killing an innocent. Well, I don't know how innocent they are, but it could be
right.
a child in the midst of 30. But one thing, I'll give you a chance, Dennis. But one thing I think what I want to be clear about is the entire Middle East is not our enemy. Al-Qaeda is our enemy, you're damn right. And I want to be as harsh against them as we possibly can. But the entire Middle East isn't our enemy, and we shouldn't want the entire Middle East to be our enemy, or we've got even bigger problems, don't we?
You're right. But what's causing these people to come over here? And whatever it is, it's not really the issue. I mean, when a guy comes up to you on the street with a gun,
right,
and he blows your leg up and says, "Give me your wallet," you know,
right.
Do you care? You know, he had a rough life. You know,
do I care that guy? No, no.
With him, you know?
No.
The issue is, the guy shot me in the leg.
That's
he
true.
Wants my money.
Yeah, but no. But you're right, Dennis. But I think what you're doing is you're conflating an individual problem with a nation's problem. I have no sympathy for the guy that shoots at my leg, in your example, none at all. I have no sympathy for Osama bin Laden. I have no sympathy for Abdul Muttalib. He wanted to die. We can give him the death penalty, right? No sympathy at all for them. I do have sympathy, though, for poor people who are being mistreated by their governments, mistreated by Al-Qaeda, too, stuck in the middle, looking for a way out. Because I think if we can actually help them build their own nation, and I'm not saying do it on our own. I mean, help them, teach them how to build schools. Don't just build them on our own. But if we can help people take control of their own countries, if we had a stable, democratic Middle East, we wouldn't have as many people coming in and bombing our buildings.
You are feeding into it, and now the way to get American aid is to kill an American.
Well, you're right about that. I made that point in the first hour. You're absolutely right about that. The scary thing is that I can just see a bunch of dictators say, well, if we just had a little bit more terrorism in our country, we could get more aid for our police. No, you're absolutely right. That's a perverse incentive, and it's dangerous. It's very dangerous.
And here's the other catch. What about the contractors who feed on to the government every time we go into an engagement?
Yeah, I don't like the contractors. I never have.
It's all about the dollar. I bet you.
So, Dennis, what's your answer?
And didn't spend a dime over there. They never want to bother us.
So, Dennis, what's your answer? Yeah, okay, you've attacked mine. Fair enough. That's your right.
Okay.
What's your answer?
If I was going into this fresh and I was attacked and I know the country.
We were attacked on September 11th. All of Afghanistan's the enemy. You bomb it to the
stone. You're right. Because
really?
I'm not going for, it's them. It's not us.
But Afghanistan is full of a bunch of different ethnic groups. Right, even if you declare all the Pashtun the enemy, and I wouldn't, but that's 60% of the country, you still got 30-40% that remember the Northern Alliance, the Uzbeks and the Tajiks. And they didn't attack us. They don't hate us. They actually like us.
How do I
bomb
know that?
All of them? How do you know that? Well, that's what intelligence is all about. That's why we have CIA. That's why we have officers in there. They really don't. In fact, they were the ones who joined with us and largely won the first Afghan war. Those people in the North, the Northern Alliance, they're the ones who, you know, I mean, they weren't great. Tora Bora, they apparently let Osama bin Laden go. So they ain't perfect. But look, I don't know who to trust out there.
And another thing is, I would continue on my bombing missions, but I don't see nothing for me to stay there, have troops, send in a contractor to feed the troops, send in another contractor to feed to supply the weapons to the ships on the sea.
I hear
buy them water, buy them this, buy them that, give some money to the Karzai government. Come on, man.
You know what, Dennis? We're not as far apart
money.
As you think we are.
Come here, Buffalo.
Dennis, you're not as far apart from me as you think we are. That's what I said. I said bomb them from the air rather than lay a bunch of troops on the ground. We're not as far apart as you think. I mean, I support the Peace Corps, and I'll bet you would, too, if I pushed you. Because these are volunteers. These are people who want to do good. And you know what? They really do make a difference. They make a difference in how countries around the world perceive Americans. And we send the Peace Corps. We don't just send them to countries that hate us. We send them to, you know, countries in Africa, poor countries in Latin America, in Asia.
Yeah, they all love us so much.
Right. Well,
but
the Peace Corps, they do.
When it gets right down to the bottom line, if it ain't our dollar, they want us to take off our underwear over there, too. And that's all I'm going to say.
Well, I appreciate your call, Dennis, and I appreciate your passion. Well, what do you think, folks? What is the middle way? How do we get out of this mess? How do we both give people hope and at the same time take down our enemies? 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Back after this.
Leslie Marshall. Real people. Real life. Real Talk, 888-6-LESLIE. Looking for a gift to show your conservative friends the light? Give them a free podcast of Leslie. They're available at www.lesliemarshallshow.com.
Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is not Leslie. This is Mark Levine. I am your favorite guest host. Leslie, we expect, will be back at the top of the third hour. We hope she'll come back. I know you've missed her. If not, well, hey, I'll stick around. But I think she'll be back. We'll hear what she has to say. I'm trying to figure out a middle ground in the war on terrorism, and I really want to appreciate all the callers we've had in the last couple of hours, from all the people saying, you know, bring our troops home, to all the people saying bomb the heck out of them, to the people who support the Peace Corps, to the people who say, no, they don't deserve a Peace Corps. To the people who said, they're fighting for freedom. Even that one caller said that, they're fighting for freedom. I don't know about that. They are, some of them, bringing in the disenfranchised, the people who are angry at their dictatorship governments. Maybe those people are fighting for freedom. But once they join Al-Qaeda, they're not really fighting for freedom anymore. And I have an easy way to tell the difference. That's right, I have Mark Levine's surefire method for telling the difference between a terrorist and a freedom fighter. How do you tell the difference between George Washington and Umar Abdul-Muttalib? Is it just that one's got an Anglo name? How do you know if you're dealing with a terrorist organization or a freedom-fighting organization? I have one clear, easy distinction. Feel free to tell your friends. If an organization intentionally murders innocent people, including children, people that have no connection with an event other than the fact that they live in a certain country or practice a certain religion or their parents practice a certain religion, if an organization kills innocent people purposely, intentionally, in order to achieve some political goal, then as far as I'm concerned, they ain't no freedom fighters. Those are terrorists, and we should wipe them out as much as we can. Now, we may not have power to wipe them all out, but it is morally correct, in my view, to wipe them out. Now, what if you have a country like the United States that kills innocent civilians but isn't trying to? We're trying to take out, say, in my hypothetical I raised before the break, say 30 Al-Qaeda leaders, and there's one that has his child with him. And we don't know the kids there. Maybe even we do. And we kill 30 ruthless terrorists, people who themselves would murder hundreds or thousands of people if we didn't take them out, and an innocent civilian dies in the process. Are we terrorists too? I say no. I say we should do our best to avoid killing innocents. Absolutely we should. If we can separate them from that child, we should absolutely do that. But if you just look at it on a utilitarian basis, if you just say we can kill these people before they kill others or not, I mean, if you had Adolf Hitler and his child, he didn't have any children, but he had a child next to him, and it's 1939, would you kill him? You might kill an innocent child, but you'd save 6 million innocent, 12 million innocent lives, including more millions of children. You'd be saving millions of children's lives, even if you killed one. So I recognize that sometimes a democracy, not a terrorist group, will be forced in self-defense, and only in self-defense is this justified, of taking out ruthless killers and accidentally killing a civilian. I recognize that. I don't like it. I think we should minimize it as best we can. But that happens in wartime. If, however, we are intentionally killing civilians, well, then we're terrorists too. In Vietnam, there was a sergeant. My listeners probably know more than I on this, who rounded up a bunch of Vietnamese men, women, and children and killed them all. It's called the My Lai Massacre. That's an act of terrorism. That's an act, even if it's by an American GI, that should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. We have even seen Blackwater contractors being prosecuted in Afghanistan for getting in a traffic accident and shooting a bunch of people that were civilians. And, you know, you can look at the facts of that case and decide one way or the other based on that case. But the general moral principle applies. How do you know if a group is a terrorist group? If they are intentionally trying to kill civilians, they're a terrorist group. If you're a freedom fighter, if your country is being occupied by another country, if you're trying to get rid of a dictator, you can fight back. You can bomb the dictator. Trying to bomb a dictator, that's not an act of terrorism. It isn't. Trying to fight his soldiers, that's not an act of terrorism. No, that's, I mean, I may agree or disagree with your cause, but I don't consider you a terrorist. But once you cross the line and intentionally kill civilians, you are a terrorist. So yes, Hamas is a terrorist group. Hezbollah is a terrorist group. Al-Qaeda is a terrorist group. There's just no two ways about it. Whatever you think of Al-Qaeda's cause, you may support American troops getting out of Saudi Arabia. But when you put four planes into buildings killing 3,000 innocent Americans, you are no longer fighting for your freedom. You are a terrorist. When you bomb a mosque, you're a terrorist. When you bomb a Jordanian wedding or a Pakistani marketplace, you're a terrorist. There's no justification for it. I don't care how good your cause is. If you have a problem, kill soldiers. Kill a dictator. Attack a military target. Don't attack civilians. Certainly don't intentionally attack civilians. So I actually think that's an easy way to tell the difference, and one that you can share with your friends. The ones who say that, well, America is the terrorist here. Well, I don't think so. We've done some things that have gone too far. If we have people in our custody and we torture them, I know we're trying to get information. But we're going beyond, we're breaking our own laws to do it. Nah, it's close. And if we intentionally kill someone in our custody and that doesn't go through the process of laws, doesn't go through trial, doesn't have a death penalty imposed upon a judge, but we take someone in our custody and we just kill him, it's getting close. But please understand the difference there. If Osama bin Laden didn't like our troops in Saudi Arabia and he had attacked American troops, that would have been awful because I support American troops. But it's not the clear definition of terrorism. In my view, when you seek men, women, and children, that's the definition of terrorism. That's why I never understood the people that supported Hamas in its war with Israel. It was shooting mortars into Israel, trying to kill innocent men, women, and children. That's the sign of a terrorist group. That's the people you don't negotiate with. There are people with legitimate concerns all across the globe, but it never requires lining up men, women, and children and gunning them down. I do suspect that Leslie will be here in the next hour. If not, you'll have me, but I suspect she's coming back. I do want to thank you, everyone, for listening for the last couple of hours. If you want to find out more about me, it's really easy to do. My name is Mark Levine, M-A-R-K-L-E-V-I-N-E. You can Facebook me. You can go to my website, marklevineradio.com. You can see where I have tangled with Bill O'Reilly. I've even been on Russian TV recently talking about our difficulties in Afghanistan. That was interesting. Check it out. Let me know what you thought of tonight's show. You can put comments on my website, whether you agree or disagree. I always want to hear from you, and I always want to keep being invited back as Leslie's favorite fill-in host. Because I'm not as pretty as Leslie, but I like to think that I bring up some interesting issues. One of the things that you may not realize, if it just a little bit about who I am, is I used to work in Congress as an attorney. So I don't always talk about foreign policy. That was today's show. But everything from healthcare to the economy, these are some of the things that I've been intimately involved in, working on legislation. Because as far as I'm concerned, it's easy to complain about the government. It's easy to complain about the way things are done wrong, and much, much harder to try to find solutions to the nation's problems. And one of the things I've always tried to do, whether it's the economy or healthcare or the war on terrorism, is try to find practical solutions, not just complain all the time, but try to find ways out of the problem. And so if you have a very clever idea, let me know. Just go to marklevineradio.com, post it on my website, let me know what you think. This is Mark Levine, signing off.